So thinking about the human search for God in the subjects or in the societies I study brings us back more than 1,000 years to a time when Christianity formed an integral part of the political, social, and cultural life of Western Europe. It was present, for example, in the creation of power centers, in political conquest, submission, in education, in intellectual life, in social organization, in hierarchy. In Britain and Ireland, Christianity was long established by the year 1000, while in Iceland and Scandinavia, it had begun to spread. So Christianity formed the overarching network through which these areas were linked with each other, but also with continental Europe in matters of education and belief. Its learned practitioners were by necessity multilingual and diverse. So, in an extended culture in which religion formed an institutional framework, what can surviving texts reveal about communities and individuals searching for God? Well, the answer is actually quite a lot, but with the caveat that the documents that have come down to us represent the views of an elite. Writing was an expensive business, intimately associated with Christianity, since above all it was and indeed is a religion of the book. So careful thought was given to what was inserted on precious manuscript pages. But nonetheless, the variety of material that those pages contain, the range of subject matter, both secular and devotional, and the diversity of views contained therein is surprising. Pretty much all of human life is really there. So really all I want to do this evening is to illustrate some of that diversity, and above all, that humanity, with reference to a range of voices from the period, starting with a relatively early story written about the year 700 in Ireland. The texts I'll mention, there are translations of them on the service list, but that's really for later. You certainly don't need to follow them here. The story I want to start with is the story of a young man, a king's son, Connla. He's in a bit of a quandary. He receives a visitation from a woman from the other world who entices him to go with her to the lands of the living where there's neither sin nor death nor transgression. Connla is sorely tempted, but his father is having none of it, and he sets his druid upon the supernatural woman. The druid does what druids do to no avail, and Connla remains torn between the love he feels for his family and his desire for the beautiful ethereal being. An emotional dialogue between father and son then follows in the text and reveals Connla's inner conflict, as well as his father's fear of losing Connla to the woman. But he's powerless to prevent it, and the story ends with Connla and the woman sailing away, never to be seen again. This story, The Adventure of Connla, was written within living memory of the extended period in the 5th and 6th centuries in which Christianity spread throughout Britain and Ireland. It presents vividly and realistically, but also allegorically, the turmoil conversion to a new and different religion might have involved. But the tale actually seeks to assert that the new may not be so different from the old. The woman's appearance in unusual clothing is immediately suggestive of that of a pagan goddess. Yet this temptress is not as she seems. Resonant of Eve, she maintains her hold on Connla by providing him with an apple, and it nourishes him when he eats it without getting any smaller for a whole month. And she counters the druid's incantations by prophesying the coming of a righteous man with many companions who will wisely judge. So she heralds, therefore, in the story, the coming of Christ. So the ostensible pagan goddess is revealed to be more resonant of a bride of Christ as she oversees Connla's tormented transformation from king-in-waiting to Christian follower. After really painful deliberation, as it's presented, he eventually forsakes royal earthly power for everlasting reward. So this is powerful pedagogy on behalf of a religion which was still seeking to extend its control when the text was being written. But at the heart of the story is a human struggle, that of Connla, grappling with life choices. His conflicted loyalties and the genuine difficulties he's presented as having in abandoning the familiar would have resonated with contemporaries struggling with a search of a different kind and with tenets of a still relatively new faith. Alongside the human, the story highlights the social and political aspects of religion. Connla's people was deprived of their next ruler because his people weren't Christian believers, or at least, like Thomas, in the New Testament reading we've heard, they were still doubters. Connla's dynasty is depicted very much as struggling in his absence. And the tale ends with Connla's brother, upon whom power then has unexpectedly fallen, forlorn, as encapsulated in the name he is accorded, namely Arth the Lonely. Not for them, the knowledge that Abram was given, as the passage from Genesis we have heard related, that abandonment of country and kindred heralded dynastic success. As Christianity became established in the period, interweaving biblical history with their own histories became a defining feature of communities' construction of their past in a new era. The Irish, the English, the Welsh, the Franks, the Lombards, and many, many others aligned themselves strategically within a biblical framework. Their own past events were synchronized with defining moments in a Christian era, as well as being ordered in a series of six or seven ages in a Christian chronological continuum moving towards an age of eternity. And on that continuum, individuals undoubtedly sought their own personal salvation, but specific voices are difficult to hear. But we do catch faint voices of them, captured in manuscript pages, often on the margins surrounding canonical or more canonical official texts. And these voices are also infinitely more varied and irreverent than modern perceptions of the period would allow. Techt the Roev, Mór Sida, Bek Thoraba, writes a 9th century monk on a precious vellum page. Going to Rome is an awful lot of hassle for very little gain. The world-weary traveller concludes his stanzas with words of wisdom. If you don't bring with you the king you seek, you certainly won't find him there. An unwelcome journey of a different type is the subject of the last and latest text I wish to mention, and that's a 10th century anonymous Irish poem in which the author calls upon God to help him keep his straying thoughts in check. Is mevel domim rothad evade eolus oam. The extent to which my thoughts go wandering is shameful. They traverse the Psalms, but not in proper order. In one leap they bound from heaven to earth, the poet claims. As slippery as an eel's tail, they escape and they can't be confined in any prison. This flowing composition would have been taken by many at face value, a humorous appeal to a creator whose steadfastness then was depicted as being in sharp contrast to the fickle nature of his apologetic subject. But it's filled with deeper, learned meaning when it's interpreted, as it would have been by many, as a metaphorical excursus on the flightiness of thought. So, complexity and multivarious shades of meaning inform the human search for God in the writings of the period I study, and diversity too, both in the many languages in which the texts are written and in the nature of the sources upon which their learned authors drew. They composed within a political and cultural climate defined by Christianity, and one which connected Britain and Ireland and later Scandinavia with the rest of the Latin West, as scholars, ecclesiastics were engaged in lively and constant debate. Within this enmeshed milieu, many Christianities can be detected in their eloquent, effective texts which have come down to us and which still provide much material for reflection today.